I invite your attention to the 24th chapter of the Gospel according to Luke. The Gospel according to Luke, the third book in the New Testament, 24th chapter. We're going to begin looking from verse number 13 down through verse number 35. And the subject of this exposition is with Jesus to and in Emmaus. Let me first say that I am blessed to be here tonight and blessed to be before you. In the last 29 days, I've been blessed to preach the gospel 20 times in 17 different places, and we wrap it up this evening. The Lord's been pleased to bless us with a good trip, except that I can say, Chris, that my wife has now heard me 20 times. She's ready to hear you for a few weeks now, so she'll be remaining for a few weeks. I return to St. Croix on Wednesday, God willing. Appreciate your prayers. Pray the Lord be pleased to open his word unto us this night. Luke chapter 24, verse 13. In the first part of this chapter, we find the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Certain women had come to the tomb very early in the morning on the first day of the week and discovered that he was not therein. An angel from God told them that he was risen just as he had said he would. Go tell his disciples. And so they did. Later that day, we read of two men walking from Jerusalem to Emmaus, and we read of them beginning in verse number 13. Now behold, two of them, disciples of Jesus Christ, not of the apostles, and we know not much else about them. But they were traveling that same day, the same day of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, later in that day. And they were traveling, they were walking to a village called Emmaus, which was about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they talked together of all of these things which had happened. They talked of Jesus. Things had not turned out like they had thought they should. They talked of his passion, his death, and his burial. They evidently did not know he had been raised from the dead, except that they had been told that it was so. They had seen no proof of it. And so it was, verse 15, while they conversed and reasoned, wondering, what has happened? That Jesus himself drew near and went with them. He just joined them as they were walking. But their eyes were restrained so that they did not know him. Perhaps he's in a garment they had not recognized before. And perhaps he just clouded their vision. Whatever, they did not recognize that it was their Lord and Savior who was here walking with them. And he said to them, "What kind of conversation is this that you have with one another as you walk and are sad?" He could tell that they were sad. They were sad. It was as though some dreams and aspirations had been dashed. They were confused. As we said, things had not turned out as they thought they should have. And so he asked them, "What are you talking about? And by the way, why are you so sad?" Then the one whose name was Cleopas, we know only his name. There is another man in Scripture named Cleopas. We do not even know that this was the same Cleopas. It's unimportant. One was named Cleopas, and we're not told the name of the other, but the one whose name was Cleopas answered and said to Jesus, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem? And have you not known the things which have happened there in these days? Are you a stranger here? Have you just come to this place? Are you not aware of what has happened in the last 3 days or so?" And Jesus said to them, "What things? What's happened?" And they said to him, "The things concerning Jesus of Nazareth," that's where he was raised, that was his home in his earliest days until he began his ministry at the age of about 30, and at which time he was living in Capernaum. But Nazareth is the place where he was raised. They identified him as a prophet, mighty in deed and word, the things he did and the words he uttered. He was mighty in those deeds, the miracles he had performed, the healings, the exorcisms, and all those things he had done, the feeding of the thousands miraculously. They knew of these things, and he was mighty in his deeds. He was mighty in his words, mighty in his preaching. He was mighty in his teaching. Even those who heard him, who did not necessarily believe in him, recognized that he spoke as one having authority and not as the scribes and Pharisees. He spoke with authority. It was known he had authority. It was known that he was a man sent from God. Nicodemus said so. "We know that you are a man sent from God. No one can do the things you do unless God is with him. No one can say the things you say unless God gives the utterance to him." And so they spoke with him concerning those things. And here is Jesus learning from them what they knew of him, a prophet, mighty in deed and word, not only before the people, but even before God. It is one thing to be mighty in deed and word before people, but it is another thing entirely different to be mighty before God, and Jesus of Nazareth was. God looked upon this one and said, "That's my son. Hear what he has to say. Do what he tells you to do." He was mighty in deed and word before God and also the people. Have you not heard of, verse 20, how the chief priests and our rulers, that would be the Sanhedrin, the council of 70 men who ruled the religious affairs of Israel, who met there in Jerusalem, they ruled the people. Even Pilate, the Roman governor, gave them authority to exercise rule over the Jews. They had delivered him to be condemned to death and crucified him. Notice to whom the crucifixion of Jesus Christ is here ascribed. It is ascribed to the rulers of the people. Yes, it was Pilate who consented to let the dastardly deed be done. But it was these people, the rulers of Israel, who joined together with Pilate, unbeknownst to them, in fulfillment of the scriptures. By God's predestination, Pilate and the rulers of Israel and the people of the Jews and also the Romans gathered together to do God's will. And here these are recounting to Jesus Christ that part and that deed that had been done by the Sanhedrin. How that Jesus had been delivered to Pilate, how he had been condemned to death, and how they crucified him. But we were hoping, verse 21, that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Well, he had redeemed Israel. Learn a lesson here. You may sit for 3.5 years or longer under the ministry of a faithful gospel preacher, and these men were disciples of Jesus Christ, not apostles, but they were disciples, but they still had some baggage from their Judaism. They thought Jesus was going to come and redeem Israel away from the Romans, the nation. Even the apostles had some misconceptions. Even on the day that Jesus was ascended into heaven, they thought that he was going to restore the kingdom. Some preconceived notions that we bring with us from religion are hard to get rid of. And these men also. We thought Jesus was going to redeem Israel. And unbeknownst to him, he had done so. Except it was not done in the way that they were expecting. We thought we would now be a free people. Well, they were. Except it was not in the way that they thought. They were still traveling with this baggage of religion. Indeed, besides all this, today is the third day since these things happened. The third day since he was nailed to a tree. We had high hopes and we had high aspirations of what Jesus would do. This man, mighty in deed and word before God and the people. And, well, last time we saw him, he was nailed to a tree and he died. And he was buried. And verse 22, certain women of our company who arrived at the tomb early, they astonished us. And we were startled at what they had to say when they did not find his body. These were the women who had come early in the morning after the Sabbath. The Sabbath concluded at sundown on Saturday. And the first day, as it began to dawn, that would be the first day of the week, what we call Sunday, as the sun began to rise, here came these women, and they were going to anoint the body of Jesus Christ. He had to be put into the tomb on the Sabbath, or just before the Sabbath, and no work could be done on the Sabbath. And so these women were coming to tend to his body and to make it suitable for burial and for remaining there in the tomb. And we were astonished at what they had to say when they did not find his body. They came saying that they had also seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Well, okay, now they are really startled. I mean, the last time we saw him, he's dead on the tree. And we heard he's alive. And they do not understand what has happened. How can it be? Is it true that he who died has been raised from the dead? And they did not understand any of these things. And so the news he had been raised from the dead was an astonishment to them. Verse 24. And certain of those who were with us went to the tomb, certain of the other disciples, and particularly this would be John and Peter. When they were told he was raised, the angel said, "Go tell Peter." And Mary had run to the residence of Peter there in Jerusalem and had told him, and he and John had run to the tomb. We read that John was younger than Peter. Peter was an elderly gentleman at this time, and he was running as fast as he could, but John was a young man and outran him. And John had gone to the tomb, and he peered inside, and lo and behold, it's empty except for the garments that had been around him. And Peter finally reached the tomb, and he just walked right on in and looked around. Sure enough, he's not here. His garment, actually the swaddling cloth that had been wrapped around him, it was lying there where he had come out of it. And the napkin that had been placed around his head, strangely, it had been folded. Folded and neatly put into a place by which they know his body is not stolen. If somebody's going to steal your body, they do not take the napkin off of your face and fold it up and put it in the spot. Jesus had done this. Jesus had risen, did not need the grave clothes any longer. They fell to the place where they were when he stood, and he took the napkin off his face and folded it and put it down as proof my body was not stolen. And we heard about this. Certain of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. He's not there. And so here these men are. They're talking with Jesus, and they're telling him all the things he already knew better than they did, but he has not interrupted them. He's let them tell about the things he did in deed and in word, and how he was condemned and delivered to be crucified, how he died, and this report. He let them tell him how that it had been said, his tomb is empty, he is not there. Verse 25, then he said to them, "Oh, foolish ones." What a rebuke. "Oh, foolish ones and slow of heart to believe in all the prophets, all that the prophets have spoken. Why have you not believed? Did I not walk with you for 3.5 years? Did I not teach you? Have you not read the prophets?" Well, of course they had. These disciples of Jesus Christ were well versed in the prophets. They knew the Old Testament. They knew the prophecies. They knew the prophecy of Isaiah chapter 53, how that he would die, but then he would behold his seed. They knew that he would prosper after he died. They knew that the prophets had said he would be put into a tomb, but his body would not see decay nor corruption. They knew that he was prophesied to rule and reign. They knew he had not done so yet, but they knew that he would. They knew the prophets said so, and yet they had not believed what they read. Are you and I guilty of that? Or shall I say, am I the only one here who sometimes has doubts and questions about the things of God? I also am sometimes foolish and slow of heart to believe. I say it to my shame, but we're not told the name of the man who walked with Cleopas, but I think his name might have meant Moose Parks. How often is it that we know what God has said, we know the promises of God, and yet we doubt and question the way that God deals with us? Oh, foolish ones and slow of hearts. Verse 26. Ought not the Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory? Had not the prophets said it would happen? Did it not happen just like the prophets said it would? Why have you not believed? Why are you so foolish and slow of heart? Verse 27. And beginning at Moses, that would be the first five books of the Bible which Moses wrote, and beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he's beginning in Genesis and going through the Bible to Malachi, he expounded to them in all the scriptures, the Old Testament, the things concerning himself. I love that text. Every time a preacher of God takes a text, matters not what the text is, he looks for Christ. He looks for Christ. We gospel preachers are rather strange in this world in that we find Christ all the way through the scriptures. Other people read the scriptures and they find other things. They find things that suit their fancies. If a man's emphasis is baptism, he'll look for baptism all the way through the Bible. If his emphasis is on the church, he'll be looking for the church in all the scriptures. If it's on eschatology, things to come, the last things, that's what he's going to look for. He might become an expert in those things, but he's missed the whole point. The whole point. This is a hymn book. H-I-M-B-O-O-K. This is history. H-I-S-S-T-O-R-Y. This is a book about him. This is a story about him. This is his story. And Jesus began at Moses and went through the scriptures. Now remember, they are 8 miles in walking that day from Jerusalem to Emmaus. You can say a lot in 8 miles. They're walking along, perhaps rather leisurely. It's about between probably 4 and 6 in the afternoon. And he expounded unto them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. God forbid that we look in the scriptures for anything other than him. Then notice, it's all about him. He expounded unto them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. My son has been blessed to preach in a number of places, and I have been blessed to read his notes or his outline the day before he preaches. He sends it to me in email, sends his notes to me, and says, read this, tell me what you think. And, well, I'll tell you what I think. I've been blessed. I've taken a number of paragraphs and made articles and put them in the bulletin. But he made a statement one time that really stuck. At the moment, it is foremost in anything I ever heard from him. But he said that Christ is the only preacher from God who preached himself. Well, that is so profound. That is so profound. I mean, I am not in this book except in the description of sinners. I don't go looking in this book for Moose Parks. Jesus did. It's all about him. And beginning at Moses and in all the prophets, there are some messages of Jesus that are recorded. The Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7, somewhat lengthy, and bear in mind that even in those three chapters, you may be reading only a summary. It probably is not every word he said. There's the Upper Room Discourse, goes for quite some a lengthy passage. There in the upper room, he talks about his going away, not leaving his people comfortless. He'll send a comforter. There is the Olivet Discourse on the Mount of Olives, a rather lengthy passage that describes the things to come. There is in Matthew chapter 23 a message in which he denounces scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, brood of vipers. And you can read some of these messages of Jesus Christ, the things he taught. You can read at some length. I have read them. I have rejoiced. I hope it's not wrong of me to think so, but I wish I could have heard this message. I wish I could have been here there on that afternoon, walking from Jerusalem to Emmaus. I wish I could have heard Jesus expounding in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. I would have loved to have heard that message. About the best I can do is devote my ministry to trying to do the same thing, showing you from the scriptures the things concerning Jesus Christ. Then they drew near to the village, verse 28. They drew near to the village where they were going. That would have been Emmaus. And he, Jesus, indicated, let them know that he would have gone further. They were at their residence, and he acts as though he's going to go further. But they constrained him. They said, abide with us. We have a hymn, abide with me, fast falls the eventide. Well, it comes from this text. They said, abide with us. Yes, they were showing Jewish hospitality. Jewish hospitality required in that place where there were maybe no inns, no place to stay. Stranger comes through, you give him a place for the night. They constrained him, even though he had called them foolish and slow of heart. They constrained him because he had just expounded unto them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. They want to know more. They constrained him. They said, stay with us, abide with us. It is toward evening. The sun will be set soon. The day is far spent. And so he went in to stay with them. And it came to pass as he sat at the table with them, the table, they're not only going to give him a place to sleep for the night, but they've put a table and put bread, perhaps some wine or water there, something to eat and something to drink. It was the evening meal. It was not the big meal. The big meal would have been at the middle of the day in their day. So this was somewhat of a repast. This is just something light before going to bed. And it would have been the custom for the host to take the loaf of bread and to break it and hand some to that man and hand some to that man and to hand some to Jesus. But before the host could take the loaf of bread to break it, Jesus took it. Just reached out and took that loaf of bread. He took bread, blessed it, asked the Lord's blessing on the bread. He broke it and he gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they knew him. Something happened when he put that bread in his hand and reached out and handed it to Cleopas and handed a piece of bread to the other man. They saw the hand that gave the bread to them. They saw the hand that had the print of a nail in it. Their eyes were opened. They now are really astonished. That's the hand that was nailed to the tree. That hand that now gives this bread to us. They knew him. This is Jesus. And just as they recognize him, he's gone. He vanished. The scriptures do not say he walked away. The scripture says he vanished. He's gone. And there they are, bread in their hands. And they know who it was that walked with them on the road to Emmaus. And they said to one another, did not our heart burn within us while he talked with us on the road and while he opened the scriptures to us? Did not our heart burn? You know, I've had heartburn and it wasn't pleasant. This was. If Jesus gives you heartburn, it will bless you. Did not our heart burn? Notice the heart, singular. They were one in their heart. Did not our heart burn? They then realized that as they were walking on the road, they were being edified by what he had to say. Did Cleopas, my heart burned in me as he spoke. And now I know why. It was he who was speaking to us about himself from all the scriptures. Did not our heart burn within us while he talked with us on the road and while he opened the scriptures to us? Notice, he opened the scriptures to us. Unless he opens the scriptures to you, this book will always be closed. He must open this book. Jesus Christ and him alone is the key that opens this book. He takes the key. He opens the book. He shows to us from this book everything that is therein concerning himself. He opened the scriptures, and then he opened their eyes, and then he opened their hearts. How blessed we are when Jesus opens things to us. So they rose up that very hour and returned to Jerusalem, 8 miles back. They had just walked 8 miles. Now they're going to go back 8 miles to Jerusalem. I dare say the 8 mile walk back was faster than the 8 mile walk there to Emmaus. Because they've got a report that must be made. They've got good news. They've got the gospel, because the gospel is good news. And they're going to rush back as fast as they can to Jerusalem. They must find the 11 and the rest of the disciples and tell them what they had just seen. They rose up. They did not take a nap. They did not rest. They got up that very hour, returned to Jerusalem, found the 11 and those who were with them gathered together, saying, "The Lord is risen indeed and has appeared to Simon." And this would have been evidently the disciples in that room. Cleopas and his companion walk in, and as they walk in, the apostles and the rest of the disciples are telling them, "Have you heard? He's risen. He's risen from the dead. He's been seen. Simon saw him." "Simon, did you see him?" "Yes, I saw him. I saw him." Simon might have recounted how that he had seen Jesus in Pilate's judgment hall after Jesus had told him that you will deny me thrice and then the cock will crow. Simon might have recounted how that he denied the Lord thrice and then the cock crowed. And he might have recounted how that Jesus, standing there before the judgment, turned around and looked at Peter. And what a look that must have been. Peter knew what that look meant. Jesus knew that Peter had denied him. But now Peter can tell everyone here, "He appeared to me. He appeared to me. The one that I denied, he appeared to me. I saw him." And the 11 and the rest of them, they're just all excited. Jesus has been seen. And they're telling Cleopas and his companion. And then Cleopas and his companion had their turn. Verse 35. And they told about the things that had happened on the road and how Jesus was known to them in the breaking of bread. Known to them in the breaking of bread. I see on this table here before me tonight that bread is to be broken and wine is to be served with it. May Christ reveal himself to us tonight in the breaking of this bread. That's his body. That's his blood. May he reveal himself to us tonight. And if he does, do not be foolish. Do not be slow of heart to believe the prophets. Rejoice in the fact that Jesus has died, and in that death, he redeemed his Israel. He arose from the grave victorious over death, hell, and the grave. He has been seen. He's in glory. He said he's coming back. Well, do not be so foolish as to doubt it. Do not be slow of heart concerning his promise. And may our hearts burn while he speaks to us. May we ask him to abide with us. He says, "Abide in me." Have him abide with us. May he always be with us. And I hope and I pray that you will believe this gospel. Do not exit that door tonight without believing. Do not walk out that door foolish and slow of heart to believe. Believe in Him. Trust in Him. And do it right now. Pastor.